Hello, and welcome back to the Paranormal Podcast. My name's Dan Pacella, co-founder, lead investigator, Orange County, New York Paranormal, and the host of the Paranormal Podcast for almost 1 year, if you can believe that. The next episode will be our one-year anniversary of when we first launched. So for those of you who have been here since day one, thank you so much for the continued support. If you joined us along the way, thank you to you as well for everything. And if you're new to the festivities, you can go back, listen to all the episodes. And if you are not subscribed, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast available on every platform you can listen to podcasts on. There's also a video version of this on our YouTube channel and our Facebook page. Make sure you're following us there as well, because not only will you get every episode of the podcast in video form, but you'll also get all of our other video content, including our investigations, much like the investigation that we're going to talk about in the second half of today's episode from Farmhouse Floral Design in Middleburg, New York. So do all the subscribing, rating, review, leave us a comment, leave us some feedback. And with that, let's dive right into today's episode. So typically what we do after we publish an investigation video is I'll spend some time in the episode talking about that investigation and giving you some behind the scenes stuff, giving you some in-depth thoughts on some things that happened. I'll put a video link in the description of this episode to that investigation if you want to check that out. But before we get to that part of it, I want to talk about something that's very much a part of paranormal investigation that I don't think, unless you do it or, you know, you get to understand or get to see as much. The TV shows dive into it a little bit, some more than others, but the real fun of it comes from learning about the locations before we go to them. Research is such a huge part of investigating the paranormal. We spend more time researching a location than we do in the location. Archaeology works almost exactly the same way. Regardless of what Indiana Jones shows you, most of the time is spent in the library or doing research. And that's great. And, you know, it's a huge part of what we do. But it does come down to, a lot of the time, when you're doing this research, there's a conflict, if you will, between what is history and what is legend. Because when we're doing research for paranormal investigation, you know, obviously we're researching the location, but we're also researching the people who live there, the people who may have died there. We're also looking into the era in which they lived or the location flourished, the likes and the dislikes of the people who lived there, based not only on who they were, but what they believed in, how they lived their lives, what their social class was. If someone died in the house, how did they pass away? What is the overall history of the land itself? We do a lot of our investigations in upstate New York, and you have to be aware that that's a French and Indian War hotspot. That is a Revolutionary War hotspot, and a lot of Native American conflicts have also taken place. You have to take all of that into account. And if you don't do this kind of research, you're going in blind. And without that guidance, we wouldn't have anything to base our investigations off of. So it is the most important part, because you don't go in blind. You go in, you know the names of who you're trying to talk to. You know their story, or as much of it as you can get. And you at least know some circumstances. But the challenge therein is, how do you differentiate between what is history and what is myth or legend? To do that, first, we have to define what history and legend are. So let's start with history. I mean, it's easy to say that documentation is pivotal for what we consider to be history. Newspapers, family documents, historical records, journals, family Bibles, if you're going from a certain era. But not all locations have these things. I mean, trust me, it's nice when they do. We love it when they do. But if they don't have that kind of information, there are places you can look. You obviously, on the online component over the last 20 years has become a huge resource. But also local libraries, local historical societies are a gold mine for the kind of information that you're not going to find online or at a library. Local cemeteries as well. I've said before that I don't like investigating cemeteries. I think it's rude. But we do go to them. We go to cemeteries because if we know who we're trying to talk to, we'll go to the cemetery. Not only to confirm the dates of death, not only to confirm that, you know, they are buried there, but oftentimes to introduce ourselves just in case they're watching who visits their grave, who we are and what we're going to try to do. And we've actually had success doing that. But simply put, history is documented fact. It's facts that we can prove through sources that are trustworthy, that are vetted, and that are likely to have that kind of information and have that information correctly. So what is legend? It's exactly the opposite. With legend, there is no documentation. It's hearsay. It's family stories, local stories, even urban legends. Has the name legend in the name. Urban legend. I also consider some psychic evidence to be legend because, again, it's not documented. It's credible. It's credible. It's a source, but it's not documented, so it has to fall into that category. And while history is a documented fact, the legend is a story that likely has some fact in there, but we cannot document it and we cannot prove it. The difference is very clear-cut. History is fact. Legend is unprovable fact, story, myth. But most of the time, in an investigation, the line between the two is not as clear-cut as that. They're intertwined in most of the locations we investigate. And many legends are born out of facts. Somebody was there, somebody did this, and then they may have done that. It's hard to fully explain what I mean without giving you some examples. I think the rarest example is a location that has just about every bit of their history documented, but still has a legend, but through that documentation has been able to confirm whether or not that legend is true. And there's no greater example of this than Hyde Hall in Cooperstown, New York. If you've never been up to Cooperstown, Baseball Hall of Fame's there, great place to go. Go up the road a few miles to Glimmerglass State Park and check out Hyde Hall. They do tours. In the fall, they actually do some ghost tours and stuff. They don't allow outside paranormal investigations. We volunteer with them. We facilitate their staff with a lot of the stuff, and we've helped them do their own investigations. But that aside, it's a state-run historical site for a family, the Clark family, that had a lot of money, had a lot of prestige, and Hyde Hall was the largest civilian home in America pre-Civil War. Needless to say, they had a lot of records. A lot of things were kept track of. And a lot of these things have been preserved. There are a lot of facts about the Clark family and Hyde Hall. The most famous legend associated with Hyde Hall is Anne Carey Clark. Fact, she was the wife of George Clark, who built Hyde Hall. And after he passed away, she left the home. The legend is that after George died, her son and his wife, their relationship with his mother became frayed, and she cursed the home when she was asked to leave. She said, "I will haunt this home forever." And as she pulled away in her carriage, she said, "Let no woman ever be happy in this home again." So she cursed it not only with her own spirit, but also with a curse of nobody's allowed to be happy here. For the record, many women lived in that home thereafter, and many of them lived quite happily. But over the years, this legend had become sort of its own thing. In fact, when Ghost Hunters filmed an episode there in about 10 years ago, they actually made that legend a huge part of their episode, of their investigation. Here's the problem. Through historical records and through research and through finding new records and all of these things the Clark family had preserved, they've been able to prove it wasn't true. There's no evidence to suggest that she ever did anything like that. There's no record of it. There's no evidence. And it's most likely it did not happen. So fact and myth completely intertwined there. We know she was there. We know exactly what she was there for because the family kept records. But yet this legend was born out of the drama of her leaving. And records, documented records, suggest it wasn't as dramatic and that there was no curse. And it's interesting because obviously when we're doing research, you have to go with the information you have at the time. And Ghost Hunters, as I said, they filmed their episode there. These records didn't exist to say that it wasn't true yet. They hadn't discovered these things. But you have to ask about it, even if they knew. You have to ask about it. It's part of the investigation to try to confirm these things. I asked about it. And if you watch our Spirits of Hyde Hall video that we made after our first investigation there with the staff, I asked the portrait of Aunt and Carrie Clark, which is said to have its own spirit attached to it. And there's some great, interesting stories and legends about that painting and the paranormal activity behind it. I asked about it, and we caught an EVP that said, leave it alone. Which proves that maybe the first part of the legend of her haunting the house is maybe true. That might have been her who told me to leave it alone. It could have been any member of the Clark family telling me to leave it alone. But it's an example of how you can have the most documented history you could ever ask for as an investigator, and there's still legends born out of it. But because of that history, it becomes so much easier to disprove or prove those legends to be true, or at least how true they are. But I'll tell you, having a detailed history like you have for the Clark family at Hyde Hall, it's a luxury. Because most of the time, you have to base almost your entire investigation off of legends, personal experience, and anecdotal kind of leads. And why is that? Because most of the time, that's all the location has. Why is it all they have? Because in most locations we investigate, the spirits we're investigating existed long before the technology and record keeping existed that exists today. Dates of births and deaths were not well kept, most often wrong. From a personal experience, of my four grandparents, my grandmother and grandfather on mom and dad's side, so four, we discovered later in life that both of my grandmother's birthdays were wrong. Like, once their birth certificates were found, the dates were just, we were celebrating them 2 days early and 1 day late. That's just kind of how it was. When the person came to the house to do the records, they put down the date. Sometimes they put the date they were there. Sometimes the hospital would put the date on the certificate when they got the certificate. It happened the same thing with obituaries. When the day the coroner got to the house was the day of death, not the day that somebody actually died. This was commonplace. Specifics of birth and death, but also specifics of diseases and causes of death. Not only were the specifics not well kept, in most, a lot of cases, we didn't know the specifics. Medical knowledge wasn't what it is today. And especially if you were not of the rich class, if you were not in that upper echelon of society from a socioeconomic standpoint. The Clark family had everything written down in records because they likely paid people to keep the records. They were a wealthy family. Most of the places that we go were not. In some cases, you do. You find that, actually. Socioeconomically, the more wealthy the spirits you were trying to talk to were, the more information you'll have about them. But it's a luxury to have that. And there's no video or audio recorders. There's no Facebook in 1890. You kidding me? There's none of this. So, most of the time with locations, all the information they can give us is the anecdotal, the legend. Here's what people have experienced. Here's who we think it is. Here's what we think it is. Here's what the stories of the property lend itself to believing this could be. And most of the time, that's all you got. Now, most of the time, when we investigate and we're asking about these legends, because you have to let the legend and the story of the location, you have to make that part of what you do. Whether it happened or not, you have to ask about it. In fact, part of what we're doing is trying to verify whether or not these stories are true. It doesn't always pan out. Most of the time, it doesn't. But sometimes it really turns out through evidence that we get that through asking these questions about the stories, in some cases, we are able to not only verify some of these things, but also get answers that wouldn't have been even thought about if we didn't know the legends. I'll give you a couple of my favorite examples of that. The Seneca Falls Historical Society, which, by the way, we're going back to investigate again this summer. Can't wait for that. We want to talk about Maria. She was the governess of the Becker children. That is the Becker Mansion. Again, wealthy family. There's some records there. We do know a lot about that family and their home and all of those things. We've done several investigations there. We love it. It's one of our favorite locations. Go check out the videos on our channels. But we know she lived there. And we know she died at a nearby hospital. But the legend associated with her is that the night that she passed away, she appeared to the parents. They woke up and she was standing in the bedroom. And she was so apparently so like there in terms of looked like a person, they actually thought that she had somehow gotten out of the hospital and escaped or had been discharged or something. And they actually, you know, called up the hospital later and said, you know, she was here. And they're like, well, no, she passed away. And she passed away right around the time that they woke up and saw her. So that one sends chills for me, because that's such a very interesting and cool story. And anytime there's a full body apparition story that involves like eye contact, it sticks out because that doesn't usually happen. When you see full body apparitions, it's generally out of the corner of your eye, and you don't see a lot of legit recounts of it with faces. I did not see the face of either of the two that I have experienced in our time. So that story stuck with me. So when we investigated, we asked questions, we checked it out. We wanted to see what she was doing, why she came back, what was her mindset, what was she looking to accomplish, so on and so on. We know nothing more about this legend, but we've captured a lot of evidence and EVP, you know, electronic voice phenomena, a lot of voices through digital recorders and also Phasm Box and Spirit Box voices that refer to it. And I think we have enough evidence that I feel comfortable saying Maria's there. Her spirit is there. She loved the family. She loved the children. Why would she want to be anywhere else? That was her whole life. So it's an instance where we've captured evidence about the spirit. We've captured evidence from other spirits in the building that seem to imply that this legend may actually have happened. But we can never verify. We'll never be able to verify it. They didn't whip out their cell phone and take a picture because a cell phone wasn't invented for another 100 years. So, but it's an instance where if we didn't know about this story, we wouldn't have asked about this story, and we may not have made the kind of connection with Maria in terms of evidence if we weren't asking the right questions and we didn't know the legend. My favorite example of an investigation dealing with legends that actually like turned out to be something has to be at the Wayside Irish Pub, and they both happened in the same investigation. Wayside Irish Pub is awesome. It's just outside of Syracuse, New York. We went up there a couple of years ago, and we didn't realize it was going to become one of our all-time favorite investigations. That video, too, is on our channel. Go check it out. We did an event or two there as well. The two legends, one of them was about a soldier. There was a story that a soldier had walked from Syracuse to Elbridge, which is the town, which is about 12 miles maybe out of Syracuse. Could be wrong on that. but he walked there, he ended up at the bar, and he passed away somehow. Nobody knew his name, nobody knew how he died, but that's just been a story that had been passed down for 100 years in this location. So we asked about it. We asked about a soldier. And we started getting it. We started getting answers. And we asked a soldier's name. And at the exact same time, the Phasma Box, the Ovulus, which is a phonetic generator, and our stationary camera, full spectrum camera in the hallway, at the same time, all picked up the word Robert. Three different pieces of equipment, three different ways of gathering, collecting evidence, all said the same name at the same time. That, my friends, is what we call verifiable proof that there's a Robert there. Is he the soldier? We can conclude that based off the questions, but we don't 100% know. You never 100% know. But I feel comfortable coming to that conclusion. I think you would have too as an investigator in that situation. We then asked how he died. And we got the voice back in a fight. It was a bar. He was a soldier. It stands to reason, and that's that he could have gone down there. Maybe he had too much to drink. Maybe somebody else had too much to drink and got in a fight, and somebody stabbed him or shot him or just beat him to death. But now, because we knew the legend, we were able to attach a name to this spirit and potentially a method in which Robert passed away. So subsequent investigations and the people who actually work there can actually call this spirit by name now. That's that legend. If we didn't know, we wouldn't have been able to do that. And honestly, that's a lot of times we tell spirits, look, please tell us your name so the people here can refer to you by the correct name. You'd be surprised how often we get responses to that. But in that same building, on that same floor, there was also a rumor of a girl who hung herself in the back room by the name of Sarah. And they didn't, the legend was some kind of love triangle or a disapproving father. There wasn't, it's a vague one. The stories were vague, but it all ends the same way, that she hung herself on the third floor and they have no idea if it's true. Like the soldier, they had a pretty good idea that something like that happened. The Sarah thing was a total legend. The owner told us, hey, you know what? While you're here, here's something I've been hearing about for years from people. And we went up, and in the exact room that they said that this girl killed herself, we caught the name Sarah in a girl's voice over the spirit box. And we only caught that voice in that room. We caught the same voice three times within about 3 minutes on the spirit box, all responding to our questions. We were able to verify, in as much as we can verify anything, that Sarah exists. Sarah was there. Did she hang herself on the third floor? I have no idea. She did not tell us much more. But now the legend becomes a little more of a fact. It becomes, okay, there's a legend of a girl named Sarah who died there. Okay, well, given the spiritual evidence we just got, yes, there is a spirit here that at least said the name Sarah, whether it's Sarah herself or the spirit's referring to it. The name they told us before we started investigating matched the name we got during the investigation. That is powerful stuff in our field. It's the kind of stuff we live for. And again, you know, all we had was the legend to go on. And a lot, most of the time it doesn't pan out, but man, those two situations, when it does, it's amazing. And that kind of leads me to sort of the bittersweet part of the whole conversation about history versus legend. It's part of the charm of what we do, and it's not going to last. I mean, untangling the fact and the legend is all part of the adventure. We use both, as I've been explaining, to try and get the spirit's stories correct. It's what paranormal investigation is. It's telling the story of people whose story has not been told and asking their spirit if they would care to tell it. That is paranormal investigation. And the legends are such a part of it. Whether they're accurate or not, they're great stories and they're great lines of questioning that give us something to go on, especially if we have nothing else to go on. But thanks to technology, that charm likely has an expiration date. Why are legends just legends? It's because there's no record of it. Just the stories. And the flavor that comes with those stories. And the passed down nature that these stories, and the life of their own, that these stories get over time. That era is long gone. I mean, we record everything now. Cell phones, social media, it's everywhere. In 100 years, paranormal investigations involving spirits of this era will not need to worry about information. Everybody's information and everything we do in our lives is all out there. If they're going to investigate, if they're looking to talk to my spirit in 100 years, all they got to do is go to Facebook and go, okay, this is what this guy was about. How do you know, a lot of the questions we ask folks about our spirits about are, you know, how did you die? Well, just look it up. We ask spirits sometimes to catch it. What color is this room? To kind of get an idea of what they're seeing. Well, there's pictures of everything now. The technology is going to rob us of some of the magic of being a paranormal investigator. And as much as and as frustrating as it can be to intertwine history and legend, one of these days we're going to be investigating spirits where the mystery is gone and we're going to know everything and we're going to have to reassess not only how we investigate, but also what kinds of questions we're going to ask when we are going to have all the answers. And that leads me perfectly into talking about the investigation that we just published last week, Farmhouse Floral Design. Great people, great location. If you watch the video, and please do, if you want to watch it before you listen to this, that's fine. But if you listen to this, it'll at least give you some backstory if you watch it after. So I could argue either way which one's better. We had a lot of folks involved in this. One of the things we always do is we invite the owners of locations or the people who are in those locations all the time to investigate with us. Because it sometimes we find helps the if the spirits recognize someone you're with instead of these strangers just popping in. And it was a really fascinating evening. It was two different buildings, which is not something we do a lot of. Most of our locations are pretty, you know, Museum Village had about 5 or 10 different buildings we put equipment in, but this was two buildings about 25 yards apart. Still, you have to set up differently. And I think, I'm not sure the spirits there knew what to do with us. It's the first time they've ever been investigated, which can be tricky. And I feel like they were like testing us and testing the equipment. Like they weren't quite sure how to use it. They weren't quite sure what to say. But there's a lot of energy there. Not only because of the large, you know, Catskill Mountain ranges in the area, including Vroman's Nose, which is the most prominent geographical feature of that area. But there's also a raging creek in the front yard, going right through the front yard. When I got out of the car, that's the first thing you could hear was the roar of this. And I'm like, okay, if there's something here, I know what's fueling it. The energy from that water is absolutely something that could be fueling the paranormal energy. Probably the most interesting part of it was the connection to Vroman's Nose. Vroman's Nose is a very fascinating and beautiful geographic feature. It's shaped like a nose. It's a rock formation that's shaped like a nose. I have a couple pictures of it in the investigation video. And, you know, you talk about history versus legend. A lot of the story of Vroman's Nose isn't necessarily verified. You know, you have the story of a man named Vroman hiding and surviving with his wife from a Native American attack up there, hence the name Vroman's Nose, which makes sense. And it comes to a point, and a lot of the words we picked up during the investigation were point. And I think what needs to happen is the outside element of that needs to be explored on a night when it's not 5 below 0 and 6 inches of snow on the ground. So I'm sure we'll follow up on that. But it was interesting to watch the story evolve, because if you watch that video from beginning to end, it starts out with just, okay, we're getting random words that kind of make sense. And by the end, the folks who knew the area history better than we do were able to put two and two together and make a potential connection between what we were getting and Roman's nose itself, to the point that we can conclude with confidence that the spirit there is connected in some way to Roman's nose. Whether it was a soldier that died on Roman's nose, whether it was somebody who fell off of it, we don't know. But through the evidence, we can conclude that that rock formation has something connected to whatever's haunting that property. And not only that, but we were also, you know, we didn't know every spirit we'd find there. Again, in that part of New York, you could always deal with soldiers or Native Americans because of just all the battles that were fought up there. But there's something intelligent there. And the correct, a couple examples of that is when we asked when people were in the room, it said six. Well, there were six people in the room. You know, I was laying down in bed in the master bedroom, which would have been the master bedroom for George and Mariah, who were the original owners of the home, who are thought to still haunt there. And I was just laying in the bed, and I commented on how paranormal investigator, I'm working really hard tonight. And a few minutes later, we caught an EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, said, "Hey, get up," which is fantastic. I love that. But again, that's something that's intelligent. We caught the SLS footage of the rocking chair when they were downstairs. You know, they were talking about a rocking chair, and somebody said, "Well, go upstairs and visit Dan and Tim. There's a rocking chair in their room." And within 2 minutes, we captured an SLS figure on the rocking chair. So that shows you that there's something intelligent there. Whether it fully knew how to communicate with us or didn't trust us yet or wanted to get to know us, that probably would explain why some of the evidence is incomplete. Like, you'd get a voice, but they'd be really far apart. Like, there was no constant communication that would happen. It would come in drips. And that can happen in investigations with spirits that aren't used to the equipment and aren't used to the investigators. I feel like a subsequent investigation of that property would be a lot better, because now they know us, they know what the things we're holding do, and they know what we're trying to do. Of course, there's also the flower shop element of it. Now, that building wasn't there when George and Mariah owned the property, but the land was theirs and they lived on the land, and they apparently haunt the land because there's a lot of footsteps heard. We didn't capture any, but there's a lot heard up there. And capturing the name George over the spirit box in the office of the flower shop off the main house and in the separate building, that shows you that he may wander around. And if it's not him, it's somebody mentioning him. So, you know, there's definitely something going on there too. And the ovulus picked up the I am not priest, which is, I've never seen that combination of words before. So definitely need to ask more questions about that too. But both buildings showed that there's something going on there. And, you know, the conclusion we always have to ask is, well, is it haunted? Yeah, I'd have to say so. By whom? That one's harder to nail down. You know, we do feel George is there. Perhaps Mariah is too. But they don't seem to be alone. And we've got to make the connection there. What does Roman's nose have to do with all of this? That's really what I need to get to the bottom of when I think about this investigation. And that's going to entail probably taking the investigation outside and maybe even taking it to Roman's nose, which is not far from there. Despite the challenges that investigating outside have, even in nice weather, this is going to demand it because of the connections that were made. And also, if this soldier is a soldier that's there, who is he? You know, George and Mariah weren't the soldier. Mr. Vroman, you know, wasn't the soldier. So who is this person? Why is he still there? Is he buried on the property? Did he fall off Roman's nose nearby and was sort of attached to the property? Those are all questions that we have to endeavor to answer in subsequent investigations. And I'm pretty confident that we'll be invited back there, because the owners are great and they are just as fascinated and interested in getting the answers to these questions as we are, which is always great when it comes to investigating, when the owners and the staff are just as into getting to the bottom of things. Of course, as is always the case, right, we have more questions and answers from an investigation, but as I said, I'm confident we'll return there at some point to try and just continue to separate the history from the legend. And while the road to do that can be long, we do have to enjoy that journey, as we may be one of the last generations of paranormal investigators that will have this hurdle to jump over. The fact that we all record all elements of our lives will one day remove one of the most magical parts of this field. One day, having to separate the history and the legend will no longer be normal. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the Paranormal Podcast.